Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone.
So you're speaking in favor of this bill?
In favor.
Okay,
LD 91-92. Senator Rossin, Representative Warren, and distinguished members of the Joint Standing Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. My name is Greg Lumbert, and I live in Pittston. I am here for you today to testify in support of LD 92, an act to require a person who provides illegal drugs to provide medical aid to another person in distress due to that illegal drug transaction. My son, Greg Lumbert Jr., 33 years old, passed away on September 18, 2015 at the Martha King residence in Gardner. His death could have been prevented if King simply dialed 911 or if King would have been truthful in a conversation with crisis and counseling when they called by phone to check on my son. All of what I'm about to say is a result of the death investigation of my son done by police. My son arrived at the Maranatha King residence in Gardner at approximately 11:30 p.m. on September 17, 2015. My son, according to King, was sweating profusely when he arrived and wasn't in good shape at all. King told police that she decided to have my son take a shower and put him to bed. King knew my son was disabled and was just struggling with substance abuse issues prior to this incident. Earlier that day, my son had been at crisis and counseling. A crisis worker called my son a little bit after midnight while he was at the King residence for a follow-up to check on his well-being. The crisis worker was convinced that my son was not doing well and wanted to speak with the person to confirm he was okay. King spoke with the crisis worker, and a series of questions was asked to King regarding my son's well-being. King was not truthful and told the crisis worker my son was okay and agreed to bring him at crisis and counseling first thing in the morning. During the investigation, it was learned that conversations about getting drugs and drug use between my son and King occurred within minutes of his arrival at King's. There were numerous text messages concerning buying drugs between my son and King. King is a known drug user and seller of illegal drugs in the law enforcement world. King told police she went to check on my son and determined he wasn't breathing, so she called 911 on September 18th at approximately 10 a.m. Gardner Rescue arrived, and they could not help my son. I met with a medical examiner, and the medical examiner told me if 911 would have been called, more than likely my son would have survived. After this occurred, I tried everything I could to make King accountable for a lack of actions to assist my son. The district attorney said there was no law saying a person has to render aid to another in a private setting unless that person is a professional-type person. I could tell an attorney on my own was an advisor of the same. The example I was given was this. If a person cuts a wrist in your presence and you have no obligation to render aid or call for help in the state of Maine, the same applies to taking drugs. If a person in medical trouble from taking drugs, an ordinary citizen has no obligation to render aid or get medical help. I know of several other incidents where the same thing has happened, and there are no laws that require a person to render aid unless it's a hunting-related accident or an auto accident. We are losing people every day due to drug issues, and many of those deaths could be prevented if the so-called friends would simply call 911 to get assistance. The present system is not working effectively. I'm hoping you will consider this new law and be in part of the solution to stop these needless deaths that are occurring every day. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you for your testimony. Very sorry.
I'm also a police officer. I have been for 35 years. And this drug situation is out of control. Mm-hmm. You know, the system is not working. I mean, I'm sure you already know that anyway.
Any questions for Mr. Lumbert? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of LD 92? Major Groton, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Rosen, Representative Warren, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. My name is Major Chris Groton, and I'm here to represent the Maine State Police and the Department of Public Safety to testify in support of LD 92. This bill seeks to improve Maine's drug policy by holding accountable those that illegally provide a drug or substance to another person, which ultimately causes that person to be in medical distress. in the context of this bill. Accountability simply means that the individual illegally providing the drug would be required to assist the victim to the extent possible and obtain help from a medical professional or a law enforcement officer. The bill also specifically provides for protection from civil liability from the act of rendering first aid under these circumstances. The concept of requiring a person to simply help a person that they've directly harmed seems so simple that one may wonder why we need to craft legislation to mandate common courtesy and respect. A recent article released by the Attorney General's office summarized the impact of Maine's drug problem. 378 lives lost to drug overdose in Maine in the last year, more than one per day, a 56% increase over the previous year. The influx of fentanyl has contributed to a 39% increase in the total number of drug overdose deaths in 2016. Opioid drugs remain the leading factor in overdose deaths, with 313 due to an opioid. Heroin caused 123 deaths last year, 15% increase. Fentanyl caused 195 deaths, a 127% increase. Fentanyl, as has been mentioned a couple of times today, is a synthetic opioid that's becoming much more popular in our state. It's 80 times more lethal than heroin. Just a few salt-sized grains of fentanyl may be fatal. There are several factors which combine to create overdose deaths. Among them are drug lethality, drug availability, misidentified drugs, or drugs laced with other substances, as well as the inexperience of users. Regardless of the cause, the results are all too often tragic. This common-sense approach to the increasing problem of drug overdose deaths in Maine simply gets help for those who make a bad choice. On behalf of the State Police and the Department of Public Safety, I urge you to vote ought to pass on the bill. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Major Groton? Oh.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to find out if you had any... I get the statistics around the losses and the drug use, but do we keep any specific records on how many lives would have been saved if this bill would have been in use at the time of all of these deaths?
I don't know if there's any way to determine that. It's tough to quantify what doesn't happen. But I think, as was mentioned earlier, there are several examples. We had one recently in Aroostook County where a lady had died from a drug overdose and was left there for days and days and days because people either chose not to get involved or didn't want to call the police or call for help. But there are a number of examples that we seem to be finding regularly where the requirement to simply call for help would have made a significant difference. It, at the very least, would have given these people a chance.
Major Groton, wasn't this bill brought up last year, like with alcohol? And I thought it was alcohol and drugs, like at a college party or whatever. Kids were not calling because they were afraid they were going to get in trouble.
It may have been. I don't think I was personally involved in it, but it's possible. I have to research that. That there may have been.
Maybe this one's more specific. Oh, Senator Searway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there was, but that was more. There was just not going to be a charge if they reported it, and it was kind of like a civil situation where they, if they were at a party and they were under 21 or something, that they just wouldn't get a charge, but they just so that they would feel free to make the call.
Okay.
I think just in response to that, I think one of the key features of this bill is this isn't about calling the police. This isn't about reporting criminal conduct. This is about getting help. This is calling EMS. This is providing help if you're able to the extent that it's reasonable to do so. So this is not about reporting criminal activity to the police.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this bill? Seeing none. Is there anyone that would like to speak in opposition?
Senator Rosen, Representative Warren, members of the Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. My name is John Pelletier. I'm the chair of the Criminal Law Advisory Commission. And our panel reviewed this bill, and I'll speak in a minute about some of the drafting issues that I think were alluded to earlier. But The folks on the Criminal Law Advisory Commission have seen many bills come over the years, and one of the things that we have observed about the legislature is that the legislature is very hesitant to use the criminal law to impose on people a duty to report. We have very few criminal laws that create a duty to report on people, and the way we interpret that is that in Maine, we don't try and use the criminal law to impose, as was said earlier, just respect and appropriate behavior. But that's a long-standing policy of the legislature, and over the years that I've been doing this and that the people on our panel have been working on legislation, that's been a strong tenet of the legislature. Now, this bill, for one thing, you've heard some commentary about people who are present. The bill applies only to the provider of the drugs. So the bill doesn't apply to people who are present otherwise. It only applies to the provider of the drugs. And as such, one of the big problems with the bill as it's drafted is that it basically requires the person to report themselves. Because it does say that the person has to render aid and seek and obtain assistance from a medical provider, first responder, or law enforcement officer. And if there's a bill that says the provider of the drugs has to call and someone calls, just that act is self-incriminatory. And it is almost like saying to someone, if you engage in illegal conduct, we'll punish you for that crime, and if you don't call authorities and tell the authorities you've engaged in that illegal conduct, we'll punish you for that crime as well. And that would raise serious constitutional questions. There's also the issue that the person who provided the drugs is not required to know that the person who consumed the drugs is in distress. So the person could show up, provide the drugs, leave. So later, someone is in distress, and they would be, even though the person who provided the drugs had no knowledge, they would be subject to penalty under this provision because they didn't call and seek assistance. And finally, if you're planning to move forward, medical distress is a very broad term. In the criminal law, people have a right to know exactly what it is that their prohibited conduct is. And in the definition of medical distress, that in it really doesn't narrow it. And particularly the phrase emotionally distraught is very likely void for vagueness. It would, in a criminal statute, the courts require that words have sufficient concrete meaning that people understand what it is that's the prohibited conduct. And so there's a constitutional doctrine of void for vagueness. And if you can't really nail down what it is that is prohibited, then the courts have found laws drafted that way are unconstitutional. So, and you know, the people on our panel, we have, you know, judges and prosecutors and defense lawyers. And these people are on the front lines of the drug crisis every day. In my day job, I oversee the court-appointed lawyer system, and routinely cases come to our attention where the case ends because the client has died, and they generally have died due to overdoses. And the prosecutors see it all the time, and the judges see it, and they're aware of it. But I think on our panel, what our thought is that on the criminal, there's a lot of things that need to go into this problem. But on the criminal law side, you know, we have drug laws with stiff penalties, and judges have authority to impose those penalties. You know, not to say that our, on the criminal law side that it's perfect, but we have confidence in the laws that we have, and we feel that this law is, this would, especially as drafted, would not be appropriate. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Groman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Mr. Pelletier. It seems to me that this bill does two separate things. One is this responsibility, but the other is the removal of any liability for providing first aid. Is that a fair or correct interpretation?
Well, it removes civil liability. But it doesn't remove the criminal liability, and I'll get back to that in a second. But it means that if you were to, for example, try to provide CPR, you call 911, you try to provide CPR, it turns out in the aftermath that you did the CPR wrong and you actually made things worse. They couldn't sue you for that. Most of the people who are going to be in this position are very likely, you know, it'd be very difficult to collect a civil judgment against them in any event. So that is, to me, that it's a provision that would not have huge effect.
Does that removal of civil liability already exist in statute anywhere?
I do not know if we have a generalized Good Samaritan non-liability statute that would be on the civil side, and that's not my area of expertise. I think it's possible that there is one, but I don't know.
It sounds like Senator Searway was willing to reword this bill, too,
yeah.
So maybe you could help, because it seems like a great idea.
We certainly could, if the committee wants to go forward, I certainly could be of assistance to try and craft the wording. I just reiterate that there really are very few places where we put this duty to report onto people and use the criminal law as the sanction for not reporting. And Representative Groman's question reminded me, I had made a note. The bill, and I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but I believe it was in the last legislature, Senator Rosen. And what those bills, there were a series of bills, and what those were trying to do was to not mandate reporting, but create a safe haven so that people could report without the fear of prosecution.
Thank you.
And I don't know exactly what happened procedurally, but they did not become law.
Okay. Representative Corey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you were to call the rescuer the police, would you, one, be required to say that you provided the drug? I don't think that what's written here says that you would actually have to say that you were the dealer of that drug, number one. And number two, would law enforcement have to presume that you were the dealer because you called the police or you called rescue? Or could you just be a good Samaritan at that point that's called the dealer that's just mandates that they have a duty to report? Anyways, thank you.
It's certainly true that you could say, portray yourself as a good Samaritan. I was a criminal defense lawyer for a long time. We got another who'll speak after me who's currently a criminal defense lawyer. And I just have to say that, once you make the call, the investigation takes place and you've called attention, regardless of what you say, you've called attention to your illegal activity. And it certainly is a self-incriminating thing, in my judgment, to be doing. Because, as criminal defense lawyers know, law enforcement are good investigators. And by and large, when they get on a scene, they figure out what happened. And people who lawyers would say don't say anything end up giving a lot of information to law enforcement. And calling attention to that circumstance would be, in my judgment, a self-incriminating thing to do for an individual who had provided the drugs.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're left with a dead person and somebody that witnessed it because of...
Yeah. Well, in terms of the policy of the legislature, you know, it wasn't that many years ago. There was a bill where someone was the victim of a gunshot from an accidental gunshot. And the person she was partying, three people she was partying with, left and went to party someplace else. And that person died. And the legislature made a choice that they weren't going to impose, a bill came out, and in those circumstances, weren't going to impose that criminal sanction for not reporting.
Representative Herrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Pelletier, and I appreciate all of the expertise that you always offer under your knowledge and your experience. But don't the courts also recognize language that's put in, if this was adopted, that would have language that would say reasonable expectations that a person under some of this language, individual that causes knowing that that person's exhibiting some kind of distress or some kind of, I mean, when we go to work the bill,
right,
in your opinion, would reasonable expectation language like that, or including knowing that the individual that furnished the drugs is exhibiting a person that, I mean.
Yeah. Well, you certainly, one of the reasons that our group looks carefully at the language is that the courts don't write language, and they don't graft things on. I'm struggling to think right now if there's a doctrine of impossibility in the criminal law, and there may be. If you left and you didn't know, it may be impossible to comply. But certainly, if the bill were reworded, you would need to. You would need to put in language to ensure that the person had knowledge of the distress, quote unquote. But then you'd need to define the distress in a way that made it clear exactly what type of distress gave rise to this potential criminal liability.
Representative Longstaff.
A complicated question. I was just wondering about some of the discussion precipitated this. If, for example, there were three or four people together doing some drug activity, and let's say for the case, for example, I was the provider, and I provided the drugs, and you got into a serious medical situation, either severely ill or threatened with death or something, and Scott Seaway, who was also there, saw this and as a good Samaritan called for aid to assist you in your distress. Does he now have any legal obligation? We don't have the legal obligation to render aid necessarily, but does he have the legal obligation if he knows that a crime has been committed and he is present, does he have any legal obligation to disclose that?
No. And that's a consistent theme as well, is that you don't have a legal obligation.
Follow up.
Then it might be possible with this for the provider simply to ask somebody else to make the call, and there wouldn't be the self-incrimination.
That is certainly possible.
Any other questions for Mr. Pelletier? Senator Diamond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, John, do you know of any other references in Maine statute where there is a requirement for someone to act, such as fishing game or other sorts of in the woods?
There was a reference to hunting accidents, which may well be accurate, and I'm unaware of it. But if you look in the index to FERDICO on page 490, there's failure to report. So in the criminal code, there's a statute. It's really, in my experience, applied as a step-down charge for arson, but it's failure to control or report a dangerous fire. But there is a misdemeanor penalty for not reporting a fire that's potentially out of control. We've imposed on our prison workers the duty to report one prison worker if they're aware that a fellow prison worker has committed a sex crime on an inmate. And treatment of a gunshot wound. And that's pretty much it. And then in the motor vehicle context, I believe there's a criminal penalty for not reporting an accident that has bodily injury.
Thank you.
Representative Longstaff.
Thank you. One follow-up question. I'm really trying to understand the ramifications of this law. Using my example earlier, if Senator Searway, for example, did not have an obligation to report the criminal offense, the investigation proceeds. There is the possibility, however, that he and I, as the provider, could still be charged. Could he still be charged with criminal activity because of his part in what was going on in the drug transactions at that time?
Well, in the way these things happen, if you came to more than one person can be in possession of a substance. So if you came to the scene and there were drugs and there were four people who had access to those drugs, they all possess it. We also have certain possession crimes that can be proved by consumption. So if you did a drug test and the person came back positive, there's potential, that sort of thing. And that, those potential consequences were the genesis of the, quote, safe harbor bills, where people were arguing that if you let people in this situation know that they're not going to be prosecuted, they're much more likely to call.
That's all.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition to LD 92?
Good afternoon, Senator Rosen, Representative Warren, members of the Criminal Justice Committee. My name is Omi Amarasingham, and I'm the Advocacy Director for the ACLU of Maine. The ACLU of Maine is opposed to the expansion of Maine's criminal code. Criminalizing new behavior does little to solve society's problems and instead has contributed to the crisis in funding and space in local jails. The consequences of increased incarceration are devastating to our communities, and the impact on budgets already strained under a struggling economy is alarming. Between 1980 and 2010, incarceration rates across the country rose sharply as a result of public policy, laws passed by Congress and in 50 state legislatures each year that collectively drove incarceration rates dramatically upwards, so that in 2008, one out of every 100 adults in the United States was behind bars. However, in recent years, state legislatures have made a concerted effort to reduce the number of people under corrections control by reclassifying crimes, investing in diversion programs, and rejecting new crimes. As a result, imprisonment rates fell 8.4% nationally between 2010 and 2015. Maine has made strides as well, with incarceration rates falling 9.8% in the past 5 years. Crime rates are also down 14.6% nationally and 25% in Maine over the same time period. But our work is not done. The United States accounts for nearly 25% of the world's prison population while having only 4% of the general population. We imprison more people per capita and in total than any other country in the world by far. We continue to spend millions of dollars locking people up for health and safety violations while we cut funding for schools and social services. Here in Maine, we spend an average of $52,000 per inmate each year. In 2010 alone, the Maine Department of Corrections spent $124.8 million in prison expenditures, and the state spent an additional $8.1 million in prison-related costs outside of the DOC's budget. Adding new crimes to Maine's criminal code will only mean spending more money on our jails and prisons. Sound criminal justice policy must respond to social harms in a way that addresses underlying problems, fosters safe and healthy communities, serves the needs of victims, and imposes real accountability on those who commit harm. A sound policy does not reflexively assume that imposing more criminal penalties signifies a more serious engagement with the problem. LD 92 imposes a severe penalty on persons who are by definition already engaged in felony conduct. We do not believe that the threat of additional criminal sanctions will change behavior in this circumstance. We ask you to vote ought not to pass. And I would just add that, Senator Rosen, the bill that you mentioned last year that gave immunity from criminal prosecution to folks who called in if there was a drug or alcohol overdose, we would support that kind of a policy to address this problem.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Omi? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition to LD 92?
Good afternoon, Senator Rosen, Representative Warren, and members of the committee. I'm Walt McKee. I'm here on behalf of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and I sent up some written testimony last week because I wasn't sure it was going to actually arrive. I wasn't sure I was going to be here today, but I think this discussion was helpful. But before I say anything, I want to say that I'm a little divided about this, and I'm a little divided because I remember when Greg's son died. In fact, I went to his funeral. And it was tragic, as they all are, but I was struck in hearing about Greg's son. He was a veteran and had some real challenges and was a real, just a very real person, to anybody that knew him, and it was very touching. And so I would offer just this part. I think there are two pieces here that are already covered under Maine law, and I think that it's important to recognize those pieces and then maybe a way forward. I can't be here for the work session, so I'll give you the way forward before I step down. The first part is that it's already illegal, as you probably know, under Maine law to furnish drugs to somebody else. Kind of goes without saying, but 17A, section 1106, very specifically provides for felony-level consequences for somebody who furnishes a drug to another person. Straight-up felony, no doubt about it. And this bill really relies on that as it is. Second of all, in response to Representative Grohman's question, there is a Good Samaritan statute. It's in Title 14 under Section 164, if you want to cross-reference that. So it does allow for protection from civil liability, not going to get sued for helping somebody out, which should go without saying, but that's been around for a while. I think that probably the better way to address this particular situation, since the upfront conduct is already a felony conduct, is to add this as an aggravated sentencing factor. And I say that because I think every judge would probably do that anyway. If you're going to convict someone for furnishing drugs to somebody else, that fact is going to be there. They're going to be convicted, and there's going to be a sentencing hearing. And a judge is going to say, well, tell me more about this. And the prosecutor, I think, if they're worth their salt, and I know they would be, they would say, oh, wait, by the way, judge, this wasn't just somebody giving somebody a drug. Here's kind of how this all played out. And, by the way, judge, in the course of seeing that this person had such significant problems, they literally walked away. So they not only provided the thing that nearly killed them, but then they walked away. I can't imagine a judge would not consider that a very serious aggravating factor, but you can hedge your bet here. And if you were going to address this in the way I think it perhaps should be addressed, is to add that as a factor that a court must consider, that if that situation happened, if from the bill with some tinkering, I think, to make sure the language is tight, then you would be forcing a judge to make that a mandatory consideration, a consideration they already would have, but one that they would have to take into consideration in sentencing a defendant. That defendant wouldn't be getting some, straight probation sentence if they would in the first place anyway. It would clearly be more significant. So I stand before you a little bit, I guess, with a heavy heart, even having to address this issue. But I thought I should because I provided testimony before I even realized this was Greg's bill. When I saw him here, it didn't connect to me that was related to his son's situation. But I do think there is a way to address this without creating a new crime but adding it as part of an already existing crime.
Any questions for Mr. McKee? Representative Corey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't hang, or I've never hung out when people use drugs before, but and I know this may be a bad question for you, but obviously you've probably worked with people that have done stuff like this. Do people generally use drugs when they're with their dealer? Is that generally how
sometimes
it goes down? Sometimes?
Yeah, I mean sometimes yes, sometimes no. I can't say it doesn't happen, but I think it clearly does. The view that there's a dealer in a certain way that comes and goes. That's one view of it, and then you have kind of the small town way, which is the dealer is just somebody who happens to bring it there with them at the time. So I don't think it's unrealistic to expect that they might actually be there watching it happen and then watching the effects.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition to LD 92? Anyone to speak neither for nor against? This ends the public hearing on LD 92.